attest to the bizarreness of it. Let's just reflect a little bit on the traviata that happened here recently, because that was one of the most electrifying first nights that I can remember at Covent Garden. There was an extraordinary chemistry between you and Anna Netrebko that night. And everything seems so uncliched, you know? They're right in the first scene. The connection between you was kind of tentative, but, you know, and the phrasing of the drinking song was full of surprises, and it was just an amazing night. Was it as happy an experience, honestly?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, with Anna, it was... It's just a great thing that we have the chance to work with her, because she's also very spontaneous. She also loves to make fun on stage, and that means that you always have to react yourself, invent new things, and you spontaneously react on each other, which makes the whole thing much more credible, as you say. And I think this joy gets the chance to come over the pit, even to the audience, and that's why then. Maybe those events are special, because it's not something, as we were talking before, that you repeat and you just try to do always the same thing, but you always try to something new, to do something different.
It's something we see so rarely in the Opera House, that kind of spontaneity. And it just made me sit up, you know. I just thought, my goodness, where is it? And it was almost as if one didn't know quite where it could go next. We know the opera, we know how it ends, but, you know, that was the joy of it, I think.
Oh, good.
It was wonderful, really wonderful. Now, what about the whole image thing? Because Decca have signed you, and we can see the... let's just say you take a good photograph. And it's really sad that nobody's here to make complete opera recordings anymore, but nonetheless, there you are with your first recital. And but what do you feel about the whole image thing? Is it something you're fairly level-headed about as a family man?
No, you see, I mean, I never said that I'm not married. I never said that nobody is telling that I don't have any children or whatever, so it's not... we are not building up a picture that is not according to the truth. I have to say, I was obviously very thrilled when I got the chance to sign this contract with Decca, not knowing exactly what that would mean. I was also very happy to record my first album, and there are many more to come. But also, I didn't expect it to be that much in the spotlight, honestly, people would really buy those albums. Because it's not the first tenor mix album on the market. Don't misunderstand me. It's just, you can't... I'm not the type that tries to overestimate my abilities. It's just, I'm very surprised and very happy, and here I am. And now I have to live with that picture.
You know, something I'd like to hear you do with Decca, by way of a recital disc, and that's a selection of Viennese operetta bonbons, because I do think of the late Fritz Wunderlich in this connection as being so wonderful in that repertoire as well. But is that something that appeals to you? I'd love to see you do Danilo in The Merry Widow. Really would love to see you.
I have to say, that's really something that is in my mind. I just have to convince that man with it now. But you can't start doing a career or a recording career with that kind of stuff, because nobody will see you as a reliable person. But once they understand that I am actually pretty honest and doing my normal job, then maybe we could start doing that. And that's my understanding of crossover, you see.
Yeah.
That's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
Why not? There are so many beautiful songs out of the 1920s, and I mean, you mentioned Fritz Wunderlich. If you listen to his recordings doing that, that's where I would say he personally feels the most joy in singing. I mean, he's almost exploding by performing those songs, and he's absolutely right, because they are great. You have just to find the right way to perform them. If you just hear them, somebody's playing the piano and somebody's singing them without being totally convinced that this is great stuff.
Mm.
They're dead.
Yeah.
It's so funny. You hear them, and it's one of those halfway recordings, and you listen to it and you say, well, yeah, I mean, that's...
Well, people underestimate.
Why did they record it? That's
yeah.
Fact.
That's the
and
problem.
Then you listen to the recording from Wunderlich,
yeah,
the same thing,
yeah.
You say, wow!
Because
let's
believes,
do it every day.
He believes they're great pieces, and they are.
Yeah.
I mean, Merry Widow is a great piece.
Of course.
It's a wonderful piece. Let's hear a bit of Humperdinck. now, I'm not familiar with Koenig's Quintett. I've never seen it. So
it's not easy to see.
It's a little piece. It's a dark little bit of fairy tale about.
Exactly. I mean, when after he is his big success with the Hansel and Gretel, he for a long time tried to avoid compose another fairy tale because he just thought it's just not the right thing. And even though he had this big success, but yeah, it was a little bit uncomfortable. And then one of his friends convinced him to do this story because it was actually written by the daughter of that friend, in that time it was almost impossible that a woman would have written the libretto to an opera, so they changed it into another name. And, long story, but I think he did write. I have to admit honestly, when I heard, well, I didn't hear it, but I was reading the score the very first time, I thought it's beautiful music, but how can you put that on stage now without making it a big laugh?
Yeah.
Because it is a fairy tale, it has a background that is, you see, one of those things you go there and on first it looks like a children's thing, but when you look at it more carefully, you realize that the big moral
yeah.
for the adults,
yes.
or the grown-ups,
yes.
and to put both in the same production, that it is something that keeps the lightness of a children story, and you also get the moral without a hammer or whatever. And we actually finally did that in a production last year in Zurich, and I was very, very happy with that production because it was done just beautifully.
Mm.
So it can be done, and I hope it will be done again because this piece is really worth it. The music is gorgeous, really, really divine. And I can fill you in with a story.
Yeah, yeah.
It's this boy who is bought. He's the prince, and he doesn't like the whole idea that to be just the next king and nothing else. And then so he escapes and runs away and tries to find his own way and tries to do some adventure stuff. And then he finds this little house of what is it? And the beautiful little girl that lives there, and they fall in love with each other, and she wants to run away with him, but she can't because she's physically and first of all mentally bound to stay there with her so-called grandmother, which turns out is the witch. And he escapes alone and is very desperate, comes to their village and finds that they are looking for a new king.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been told by this witch who lives in the woods that the first person who enters the village at 12 noon will be their future king or queen. And so he comes and says, well, I'm a king, I can be your king, I can lead you, and I can do this, and we will be all happy and free, and everybody has enough food and drink, and blah, blah, blah. And they just laugh at him and say, what do you want? I mean, because he looks very shabby and definitely not like a king. And then 12 o'clock, the big doors of the village are opening, and in comes his girlfriend, but she is hooding gooses, I don't know how you call her. Guska. So she enters with all those gooses. She has a crown, but they say, oh, that's the best couple. So they put them together and throw them out of the village because they say, well, that's, that's crazy if you don't put those two together. And they end up dying
and demoralized. The moral, I suppose.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Appearances can be deceptive.
Exactly.
Okay, let's hear it.
It's beautiful.
Has changed quite a lot, I think, and you know the darker colours are so much more prevalent now. It's really, really interesting. We've got a this is something I wanted in this next piece. It's a delicious French grand sumptuous aria from Massenet's Manon, which I believe you're soon to sing in Chicago, am I right?
Exactly.
With Nathalie Dessay.
Right.
What a mouthwatering prospect. But this is just luscious, this aria. This is from Act 3, Farewell, Dream of Love. Let's hear it first. And then we'll meal at our end, with extra dessert, I think. It's been really interesting hearing you talk, Jonas, about, I talked about the diversity of your repertoire, and you have talked about some of the possible things you might try in the future. People were already surprised when you sang Florestan, for example.
Exactly.
You know, because it belongs to that tradition of Heldentenor, you know, heavyweights who sing Siegfried, and you know. Do you have any fear? I mean, you obviously got a very good sense of what your voice can do and what you can do, because people do make big mistakes, don't they, in the future?
Yes, definitely. I mean, only time can tell whether you really have done a mistake or not. I keep saying the problem in this business now is, since you have to plan so far in advance, it means that it's almost like you have to guess the future and to know what you want to accept. Meaning, is this part already in your repertory? Is it still in your repertory? And much more important, do you want to sing that at that point? Meaning, if you're now thrilled by something that you just have done the first time, it's easy to say yes to many, many more productions with the same part, and then maybe you come at a point in 2 or 3 years where you realize, well, yeah, I think I had enough. What do you do now? Are you going to cancel then the other 5 or 6 that still are coming? So it's always difficult to find the right mixture, also to which pieces to put next to each other, so that the change, the switch between the different repertories is not too difficult, and that there is enough time for the voice to just to the other one. Even though you were mentioning that I'm trying to keep my repertory as wide as possible, I have to admit that my voice needs at least several days to come from one to another. To climb up it's easier than to go back down. Mm-hmm. And I realized that the first time, actually, only like a year ago when I was doing Carmen here. And I did, I think, 2 days after the last Carmen, I did a Rigoletto in Zurich. And it was not easy to find that, because Rigoletto is, the count is really way different from this Carmen. And, well, I did it, but I really had to practice every day to get the right condition of my voice, and that's, I think, the main problem. Okay. And obviously, you're right, there are some points, some parts that you may never be able to sing, or that you shouldn't have done, but to do it once, I think that is, you can't kill yourself. Mm-hmm. And if you've done it once and you realize that it's not good, or not already, and you need to wait for another 5 years or whatever, then it's always good if you have a really a difficult new part in your, you put it just once in your schedule, and when you've done it, then you can say yes to other productions. And sometimes it's a shame because you have done a part, you tried it out and you loved it, and there you are, you have to wait another 4 years to sing it again.
You have to be a bit of a fortune teller.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes it's clear. I mean, like this Tosca, when I finally put the first step for doing Tosca here for my first time, I knew that I would love it, and I knew that I would want to do it more. And so there are going to be many, many more to come, at least, I think, 2 more new productions and 2 or 3 revivals in different houses. So that's okay. That was no big risk.
Right.
But a risk would be if I do Otello for the first time and I would think that I could do it now everywhere and every day.
Well, I was going to mention Otello, but that's probably a bit down the road, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's something it's...
You never know with you, but...
No,
you know,
no. I mean, I have to behave. It's something... it's a very, very good-looking candy, and I just... needs to keep on keep the diet until I can.
What are you doing here in the future? What are your plans there?
I don't know whether I'm allowed to say that, but there are more things to come.
Yeah.
Next will definitely be in a little more than a year's time, a revival of Disto Carlos that they're rehearsing right now. I hope it's going to be good, because I don't know yet. No, I'm very much looking forward to that, because Carlos, I've only done so far in Zurich, in my hometown, and it's so gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much important for a tenor, because Don Carlos, the tenor is just one of many. I mean, they're at least 4 more characters that have the most beautiful arias that can sing the most gorgeous things. And the tenor has this one aria. In this version we're doing 5 acts, but in the 4-act version it just starts up with this aria and it's over, and nobody had realized that was an aria. So, and that's it. And then we only have, besides the trio, but I mean the big 2 things are the 2 duets with Elisabetta. The first has some beautiful phrases in it. Obviously, it's great, but it's not really the end of the world. But the last duet is worth doing the whole part, because it's so beautiful, and that's why I want to do it. And I don't care whether the others are standing in line. I do it for me, because I love the music, and everybody loves the music because they're colors. It's almost like it's a permanent sing-along. It's one beautiful melody followed by the other. So,
well, it's the director of our National Theatre, Nicholas Heitner, directing it, so let's hope it's, you know, up to scratch.
Well, no, I'm gonna see the dress. I promise.
When I came in this evening, the stage doorkeeper said to me, "Oh, there's a letter arrived for Joan Kaufman." Maybe you were doing some soprano.
I'm able to do it, nobody wants to hear it. Once you pay for it, then it will be even many more important. Maybe my children would like it, but...
For those of you who haven't heard his Cavaradossi yet, we'll hear the last act aria. I think, am I right, would you agree, the key to this is this extraordinary feeling that he's alone, you know, that the woman he loves so much is... He doesn't expect to see her ever again.
No, exactly. And he realizes that, as he mentioned, and that in this aria, that he realizes how much he loves her and how much he loves life just because of her. And that he'd done this big mistake because in his eyes she betrayed him and therefore he condemned her. And now he regrets it, obviously. But this aria is written really, really beautifully. And I always say... When people ask me how I can manage to feel it and to be in the right mood for it, and it's so simple because Puccini did it. I mean, he wrote it obviously on this recording, and on most recordings it starts only where the pianoforte comes in. But in the opera, there is another minute or even 1.5 minutes of music before that, and it's as if Puccini takes your hand and says, "Come with me," and he brings you. Mm. Perfectly into the right mood, and you just stand there and let the music do its job, and then you're there.
But the finesse with which you sing it draws the audience into your confidence as well, because again, you know, that's that kind of nuancing, if you like, which makes it very intimate and very personal. You just wanted to arrive. How do you manage to balance your family and your this great international opera machine that you're in now? Your wife's here this evening, and I know your children are here too, and you're having a little bit of free time ahead.
Well, yeah, that's always a challenge if you have if the children have some time off. I mean, at school, some holidays, or whatever. Even though they sometimes don't like it very much. They come with me or come visit me. That's their idea of making holidays, unfortunately. No, my daughter was complaining a lot because she said, "Oh, we're going to London, it's a big town, and it stings." But she's fine now. She likes it. So. No, but you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, I always say, the most difficult part of this job is that, unfortunately, you can't do it from home. So even with all those computers and everything, nobody found a way to beam us into the opera house and back home.
Soon your performances.
No, so it's not easy, but I'm trying, and we all try to make it possible. And again, it's not an easy thing, and you always try to go home even though it's for a short period, and sometimes you realize if you just go for it one day instead of bringing joy, you're just causing trouble. Yeah. Because you're destroying the working system by appearing there. Now I'm the center and everything has to turn around me, and it just doesn't work. It helps yourself to calm your guilt or whatever it is, but it doesn't make much sense. So it's better to spare those days and put them all together in one line and have a week off or something, which is much easier.
What do you like to do when you're not singing? What pleasures do you have? hobbies, sports, anything?
Yeah, well, some sports, but mostly, obviously, I'm spending time with my children, and I'm definitely, I'm not a golfer, so I'm not off for the course, and I just drop my bags with my dirty shirts or whatever, and run off, and then, but we do, I like to work, I mean, to do some, well, to repair things,
fix things.
I love that, and it totally relaxes me. No, and it's also, I mean, I always run around with some tools because I know wherever I go, even in London, it happens that you rent an apartment and you have to fix something.
Well, they've got some jobs around the opera.
Well, no, somebody, the first thing, when I was here the first time, somebody showed me that shop, that tool store in St. Martin's Lane.
Oh, yeah.
And so I went there to wrap some things, because the heating was working well, and the windows were closing, and the switches were going. So, you see,
give me your
I keep myself
in. Well, I've left the best until last, I think. Die Meistersing.
Ah, okay.
Wagner. I mean, do you think you'll sing it on stage?
Oh, yes.
Definitely.
No, I'm pretty sure. I've done Parsifal so far, and well, besides some smaller things like Malta in Tannhäuser, but the next big step will be Lohengrin next summer in Munich. And then probably then there's a Siegmund in Milan. So it's step by step, little by little, and definitely Meistersing will be there. I only did it in concert so far in the Edinburgh Festival, and I keep saying almost every week, I keep saying to my manager, where is the Meistersing? Where is it? I don't see it. It doesn't appear in my schedule.
Well,
I'd love to do a revival in maybe 2 years' time, and maybe we find that. Possibility somehow. And it has always been this that way. It just pops up and there it is, and you grab it and you say yes.
Well, it is one of my favourite pieces, and I think the miracle of it is that the Prize song, I mean, Wagner had this little bit of pressure on him to produce the most beautiful thing you could ever hope to hear.
It's absolutely true, and that's why I think it has to start very intimate, very soft, because imagine the situation. This guy, not very experienced in this whole thing, he just learned how to deal with it, how to do the right rhymes and the right rhythm and the right melodies together. It's a very complicated system that those Meisters have there.
Mm-hmm.
And there he stands in front of the crowd. Everybody's there. Everybody is watching him, and they all and especially Beckmesser is there, counting his mistakes.
Yes.
So there's not only a little bit, there's tons of pressure on him, and therefore he can't just go there and start right away. Ta-ta! Here I am. He starts soft, and then the more he becomes comfortable with it, and then he. Let's see.
Tons of pressure on the tenor as well. Anyway, here it is. Thank you, Jonas, for sharing some of your thoughts with us, and we get great pleasure from you, and hope you return here many more times.
I will.